Good afternoon. This is John Richardson speaking with you from Toronto, Canada. Today is July the 14th, 2022, in Canada, the United States. But what day is it where you are, Karen?
Oh, it's July 15th already. John, nice and early in the morning. Sun's coming up nice and clear.
It's going to be all right. I'm joined by fellow seat members Laura Snyder and Karen Alpert. And the great thing about having all three of us on a podcast is that we can actually, by doing one podcast, do 2 days worth of podcasts, which is, you know, really a wonderful thing. So anyway, it's hot and humid here in Toronto. What's happening where you are, Laura?
It's a lot hotter than where you are, John.
No need to be an extremist.
Yeah, it's a lot colder here.
Okay. So where you are, Karen, it is, I guess, the winter. Well,
yes, definitely winter.
So, you know, sometimes doing all this research on the problems of Americans abroad, it can be lonely. It's certainly dirty work, but it can also be lonely work. And sometimes you get the feeling that nobody's ever done any of this and nobody even cares.
Yeah, but you found something interesting, didn't you, John?
Well, I found something interesting, but actually it was the result of somebody else who put this historical relic from the past up on Twitter, which prompted me to do a little bit of research. And I actually wrote a tweet that says a recent archaeological Twitterological dig uncovered a historical artifact from the Carter years. Anybody remember him? 1977 to 1981, titled, now you're both sitting down, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Everybody, I hope anybody listening is also sitting down, because here is what this is titled: Equitable Treatment by United States of its Citizens Living Abroad. Laura, do you think I'm making that up?
Well, if I didn't see it with my own eyes, I would have thought so, yes.
I mean, this is remarkable. Equitable treatment by United States of its citizens living abroad. And I end the tweet with a curious thing from a curious time. Well, God, Karen, what do you think of that?
Well, look, I was really surprised to see how many of the issues that we're facing today had been identified, 45 years ago?
I know, it's just, I mean, it's amazing. I mean, it's gotten a lot worse, but so what happened was that there public law 95-426, which became law on October 7th, 1978, as part of the Foreign Relations Authorization Act, fiscal year 79, a law is created which actually acknowledges the existence and value of Americans abroad. If you can imagine, it didn't come from President Carter, by the way, apparently it came from Senator McGovern. But here's what it says, section 611, unbelievable. The Congress finds that, I mean, that, isn't that just, you know, like a message from God? The Congress finds that, you know, not a lone senator, not some American abroad living in a ditch somewhere, but rather the Congress finds that now United States citizens living abroad should be provided fair and equitable treatment by the United States government with regard to, now listen carefully, taxation, citizenship of progeny, veterans benefits, voting rights, social security benefits, and other obligations, rights, and benefits. Unbelievable. And here's section two, such fair and equitable treatment would be facilitated by a periodic review of statutes and regulations affecting Americans living abroad. Isn't that mind-blowing?
There's also this provision that was added just a little bit later that U.S. statutes and regulations should be designed so as not to create competitive disadvantage for Americans living abroad or working in international markets. Gee, wouldn't it be nice if that were law now?
Well, that's right. Now that happened, that was the second sort of stage in the evolution. That happened in 1979. I mean, the fact that there's two statutes in 2 years suggests that for 1 year in American history, Americans abroad may have been valued by Congress. But what's also interesting, it says not later than January 20th, 1979, the president shall transmit to the Speaker of the House of Representatives. I mean, you know, to put this in context, so Joe Biden, okay, is going to transmit to Nancy Pelosi. It's hard to imagine this going on today, isn't it? And the chairman of the Committee on Foreign Relations, a report which identifies all United States statutes and regulations which discriminate against United States citizens living abroad, evaluates each such discriminatory practice and recommends legislation and other remedial action the president finds appropriate to eliminate unfair or inequitable treatment of Americans living abroad. Oh my God. So what do you think of that? I mean, what would you do, Laura, if that law were passed today? What would be the first thing you'd do?
I think I'd wonder if I was living in a parallel universe. I can't imagine that law being passed today. But if it were, obviously, I would hope there'd be lots of people petitioning the government to explain on all of those areas why there's problems that need to be addressed.
Well, you know, you would hope that, wouldn't you? But I have the impression going back to 1978, 1979, that there weren't that many people who actually took an active role. Although, if I'm understanding this correctly, that was the reason for ACA, American Citizens Abroad, being founded. In other words, yeah, to respond directly to this.
They provided the president with an extensive report on some 60 different areas where they thought there was discrimination against Americans abroad.
Yeah, and it was, I thought it was very good. It was, you know, I thought it was well written. It was certainly rational and lucid. But you know what's amazing about it? So this goes back to 79. And things have gotten just so much worse since then, right? I mean, like, there's no, like, those people in 1979, even with their list of 60 complaints, were living in basically, you know, a beautiful world.
Yeah. Well, remember that the legislation that taxes passive foreign investment companies came in with the tax reform of 1986. So that would have been, you know, 8 years after or nine or 7 years after the this law. So, and while CFCs existed back then, transition tax and GILTI were 2017. So.
You had FBAR, but it wasn't really enforced. You didn't have FATCA. I would say with respect to taxation, it's clear things have gotten many, many, many times worse. I suppose you could argue with respect to citizenship, things have improved. People do hold on to their citizenship easier than they did before. Tax issues notwithstanding, obviously. And they're able to transmit citizenship to their children easier than they could before. Voting improved, I suppose, in some ways, the ability to vote from overseas, I'm sure has improved since.
It's improved since then for sure, but there are still states where.
Right. Americans do not have a constitutional right to vote, which is very interesting. So, you know, I mean, you've got something like, I mean, there's all kinds of Americans abroad or Americans abroad associated with, I think, 13 states that don't have the right to vote. So, I mean, that's always been an interesting issue. It's very interesting to me that, you know, American citizens by virtue of citizenship do not have a right to vote. It does, you know, it just doesn't go along with that, right?
Yeah.
The other thing that didn't exist, of course, if we go to the 90s, right, we have the rollout of all these punitive foreign trust provisions and everything. Mm. et cetera. And the whole, another thing about the 86 tax reform that is, you know, it's, again, you know, I've seen one or two references to this in articles, but it's so, so significant, was prior to 1986, you know, Karen, the rule that says for subpart F income, if it's taxed at greater than 90% of the US rate, it's excluded.
Right. Uh-huh.
That 90% figure was put in, it was part of the Reagan tax reform in 86. Before that, it said, you know, if they pay substantial tax or something like that. So, I mean, it may be that subpart F income didn't even exist, you know, in countries like Canada and Australia, where, you know, obviously substantial tax was paid. So, you know, that is, I mean, it's amazing to me that that went on, right? And I also think that ACA did, you know, a really, really fantastic job with that report they wrote.
Yeah, that report was pretty extensive.
I mean, it should be read by everybody today. I mean, I think that the way America has evolved, I think every resident American should start the day by reading part of the Internal Revenue Code. And I think that every U.S. citizen abroad should start the day by reading that old ACA report.
So this is a really interesting law, John, but is it still on the books?
No, it's not on the books. So you know what happened was, see, the problem with the law is that it requires the president to do something, right? You ought to come up
with periodic reports.
Yeah, which, by the way, the Carter administration did. Okay. And, you know, and
there were two of them.
Two of them. And they were both, I'd say, you know, equally idiotic and nonsensical. You know, again, because I think it's very hard to understand this, you know, unless you've actually lived it. But the point is,
as we said, the tax rules back then were simpler, anyways.
Oh, I know. No question about it. And even then, they couldn't understand the problem.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so, I mean, how could they understand the problem today? But see, the thing is, the reason why what happened was that, you know, so the law requires, you know, the president to do something, to make a report. And, you know, as you may know, Carter lost the election in 1980 and Reagan became president. And, you know, the thing about Reagan is that his general philosophy was, you know, if you can't give it to me on one page, I don't want to hear about it. And would you think that this would be something the Reagan administration would want to get involved in, writing reports about Americans abroad?
I would think it'd be the last thing they'd want to do.
But the law was requiring it. I mean, if the law is requiring them to do something they don't want to do, what would you do?
Well, they could have just ignored it.
They probably could have
gotten away with ignoring it for a while.
They certainly could have. But President Reagan was a man of principle, of great principle. I mean, do you think that a man of principle who really didn't want to write a report would just ignore such an affirmative obligation imposed by Congress?
I would say, given that they did repeal it, that they wanted to make sure that they were never going to have to write that report.
Well, I think, you know, that's probably right, because in 1982, which was not too long after the Reagan administration took over, in fact, to be precise, on August 24th, 1982, do you remember where you were that day, Laura?
Generally speaking, sure.
Do you remember where you were, Karen?
82. Yeah, okay.
Sort of?
Yeah. Sort of.
Well, on that day, the law was repealed because as part of a law to repeal a whole bunch of obsolete provisions in the law, right? So what we have is a law that specifically recognizes the values, the virtues of Americans abroad, specifically requires that they be treated generally in a just way, specifically requires that, you know, this is not aspirational, that there actually has to be some research into this, So by repealing this as an obsolete provision, don't you think it's reasonable to say that on August 24th, 1982, the principle that Americans abroad should be treated in a just way was rendered obsolete?
If they just wanted to avoid the report, they could have repealed just that particular subsection.
Yeah, I think it's fair to go even further and say that they did not only not want to write the report, they also did not want to have to treat overseas Americans fair and equitably.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Laura, that you may very well be right. I really cannot think of a single instance. Of course, it's hard to see a single instance where any American is treated fairly, regardless of where they live. But particularly with respect to Americans abroad, well, I can think of something, actually. You know, the idea of changing the FACA reporting threshold to $200,000 for Americans abroad when it's $50,000 for resident Americans. Is that sort of treating Americans abroad more fairly?
Well, if you concede that the U.S. has any interest in the bank accounts of people who don't live inside the U.S. and don't earn money inside the U.S.
I don't know. Is it?
Why are they so interested in the bank accounts of people in other countries? You know.
Well, that they ask all these reports to be filed and then they do nothing with the data. So I don't know.
You know, it's as though, you know, the meaning of American citizenship is, you know, can now be sort of encapsulated by a few words, FBAR, FATCA, along with an annual message. If you're an American, report early, report often, report everything, and by God, keep a record of what you report.
So Congress said in 1982 that this provision was obsolete and they repealed it. Does that mean that overseas Americans are no longer being treated or no longer have the benefit of the equal protection provisions in the Constitution?
You know, that's a perfect question for Laura. You know, who I consider to be, you know, one of the world's experts on equal protection. I mean, I would put it a little bit differently, okay? I think maybe the question is, and Laura, maybe you can help me with this, is, so we start off with a law that, you know, requires an awareness of Americans abroad, and along with that awareness, a principle of equal treatment and non-discrimination, right? I mean, that's what the law says. So then we move to 1982 and the Reagan administration repeals that as being obsolete. So I guess the question I would ask you, Laura, is, do you think that if a law requires equal treatment and non-discrimination, and then it's repealed by another law as being obsolete, would it be the position of the American government that the whole notion of fair treatment of Americans abroad is really obsolete?
Well, I think you could make a case for it. I mean, for sure. The 1982 law that you cited repeals these provisions as being obsolete. So they're saying it's obsolete. So they must think it's obsolete.
Do you think that raises any equal protection issues, any constitution equal protection issues?
Well, it's the government is saying we don't think we have to treat overseas Americans equitably. So clearly, that should raise some equal protection issues. Luckily, though, the Constitution, it's the Constitution that has the 14th Amendment that has the Equal Protection Clause, and Congress can't repeal that like it can repeal one of its own laws.
Well, that's right. So, I mean, isn't the argument, or is it an argument, that a congressional statute that repeals another statute is for the purpose of establishing a principle of equality and non-discrimination of Americans abroad is a violation of equal protection to render that notion obsolete?
It's certainly a signal that the government plans on treating overseas citizens inequitably At a minimum, it is a signal of that.
At a minimum, it would be more reinforcement for that fundamental principle when it comes to the U.S. government that it's not that they don't care, it's that they don't care that they don't care. Would it be an example of that, perhaps?
I think it goes even further than that. In this case, they're saying, yeah, you know, we're going to do it because it suits our purposes. So and we care to not treat them equitably. That goes one step further.
We care about them only to the extent that we do not want to treat them equitably.
Obviously, if it serves whatever other purpose we want to serve.
And it's after this, a few years later, after this, starting in 86, so they really go into high gear, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, just think of the abuses of Americans abroad that, you know, have been going on and accelerating, you know, since that time. Do you suppose that had this law still been on the books that, you know, somebody might have asked the question, you know, this whole PFIC thing, I mean, you know, could this have an effect on Americans abroad?
You know what? Somebody would have raised it, and that probably would have prompted at that moment this to be repealed. Maybe this was always destined to be repealed. And maybe that's why it got repealed so quickly.
What a horrible thing. What a horrible obligation. What a horrible notion to treat those traitorous scum leave the United States. Why should they be treated fairly? Karen, so you read the ACA response to this, and I think that they deserve a huge shout out because they did great work.
Oh yeah, it was excellent.
Yeah, so maybe, you know, tell us a little bit about how you interpreted their report and, you know, any particular thoughts that you have on it.
So, you know, a lot of their issues were on non-tax issues where Americans abroad do not get the benefits that resident Americans get. For one of their examples was VA mortgages. You can't get a VA guaranteed mortgage if your property's outside of the US. Well, clearly that discriminates against veterans living outside the US. But there were a fair number of really perceptive tax issues that they raised. So things like phantom capital gains and the discriminatory treatment of Americans with a non-resident alien spouse.
Now that I found very interesting because that, although that's very obvious and a gigantic problem, it is not something that I find to be a huge part of the discussion today. Do you agree?
Yeah.
I mean, certainly. Is it because the other things are so much worse?
Possibly.
But I mean, you know, that's been, you know, the abuse of the American who marries a non-citizen or a non-resident, you know, mm-hmm. appears to be so baked into American culture.
Yep. Yeah. They also talked about IRS administration issues, the same problems we're having today. They wanted toll-free phone access. They wanted they wanted the mailing times to be reduced or the interest to be, you know, start running a bit longer to allow for international delivery. They wanted say pre-internet days, right? So every American would be mailed out a package of tax forms, but if the form you didn't want wasn't there, you had to get a physical copy somehow because there were no PDFs or anything.
Can you imagine what a problem that would be?
I mean, if you were
of that
in Australia and you needed a form that wasn't in that package, it would have taken you months to get the form.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And then one that I found really interesting was they realized that, you know, all of the provisions that were covered in the presidential report were all about earned income being excludable or not. And they were all aimed at American employees of American companies that were stationed overseas. And the Carter administration seemed to think that was the majority of Americans abroad.
Yeah.
Without any support for it, they think that,
yeah,
that
that's the majority. So no discussion or recognition from anybody, including ACA.
Well, so ACA has this one point that says, the United States is the only major country of the free world that taxes the overseas unearned income of its overseas citizens. Many in the United States feel this is perfectly proper. Yet those who suffer hardship from this practice are those usually who have worked to accumulate a nest egg for retirement. Overseas retirees living mainly on the fruit of such capital accumulation are treated much worse under present U.S. law than those earning an income abroad.
It's extraordinary, isn't it? I mean, at a bare minimum, that means that this stuff, people have been aware of this stuff.
And this is before the PFIC rule.
I know. Things have gotten 1,000 times worse. So here are the circumstances that prompted this whole crisis. And it was a crisis because, you know, when the Democrats assumed power in 1976, the first thing they did was they did two things. They got rid of the foreign earned income exclusion, okay? And they basically taxed housing benefits or employer benefits that Americans abroad received, not at the employer's cost, but at the fair market value of, say, the housing supplied or something like that. The combined effect of these resulted in, I mean, it sounded to me as though it was, you know, it created as much sort of general angst as things like GILTI and the transition tax, but applied to more people.
The other point was, by adding these to your income, that meant that your unearned income, if you had any, was being taxed at a higher marginal tax rate.
Yeah, that too. You know, I think the United States has always hated its citizens abroad. What do you think?
There's multiple records of that, of, you know,
all the way back to the Civil War.
All the way back to the Civil War, you know, saying how bad we are. And there was one congressman who said, was it in 1894? I don't remember the exact year, but when he was defending the income tax, and then on top of it, he was not defending the income tax, but he was defending taxing the income of overseas Americans. And his exact words were, if there's one class of people we ought to tax, it is overseas Americans. Basically, and this goes back to, I mean, I have to look it up exactly, but I think it was 1890 something when there was a senator who said that. And that was, you know, part of the congressional record to defend taxing the worldwide income of overseas Americans.
You know,
we've always been, you know, draft dodging, you know, rich,
unpatriotic scum. Overseas. Unpatriotic scum. Absolutely. Right.
We certainly don't have legitimate reasons for living overseas. We definitely don't. It's marrying someone who's not American, not a good reason. Having family overseas, having found a job overseas that's not with a U.S. company, just wanting adventure to learn another language, none of those are legitimate reasons.
Yeah, so and I think part of what's going on here, especially, you know, you go back to the Carter years, there were just starting to get some changes in the citizenship rules, right? Because it's only less than a decade after the Efroyim decision.
Yeah.
So you've got people who emigrated from the U.S. have lost their U.S. citizenship by naturalizing or whatever. And that's no longer happening. So this this whole liberalization of the citizenship retention for Americans abroad has actually made the problem worse.
Oh, no question about it. No question.
It's made the tax problem worse. So the Carter administration says many, probably most Americans abroad are there temporarily, i.e. they retain a U.S. domicile. Mm-hmm. So they don't explain why then it's better to use citizenship than domicile. No, use domicile.
Yeah,
use domicile rather than citizenship. You're going to catch the people who are overseas temporarily for work. They're going to still be domiciled in the U.S. And fine, they have a reason to retain their U.S. citizenship. They're getting some benefits from it because they're going to go back. But you people who emigrate, I don't think there's any reason the U.S. should be taxing them.
No. I mean, clearly there's not. One of the things I found very interesting about the ACA report is that as far as I could tell, there's only one point at one time in the 2 years that they're writing or whatever that they actually suggest that the solution might be to end citizenship as the basis for taxation. All right, it's very interesting because then as now, right? I mean, they're still concerned with trying to make the existing citizenship tax rules fairer, rather than sort of, cutting off the problem and its legs. It's quite interesting. It's only part of one paragraph that I could find where they, they point out that the United States is the only country in the world mm-hmm. that, bases tax residency on citizenship. But, I was impressed with the report. I think it was, it was a great job they did.
Yes, great find, John.
Well, I didn't find it. It was, somebody on Twitter who was wondering if it was still the law. And, oh my God, could this really be the law? And, after digging into it, unfortunately not. And it's even worse because, the law ended with a sweeping pronouncement that the concept of valuing and treating Americans abroad fairly was now obsolete, setting the stage for all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. Also, part of this Twitterological dig uncovered a 1980 article in the New York Times. This is 1980. Costly fallen expatriate jobs. Now, this is an article talking about taxation Americans abroad. But again, they're referring to them completely as expatriates, right? The whole notion is that these are people who, leave the United States for a little bit. Here's some clips from this. The expatriates say that many laws and practices tend to make second-class citizens of the 2 million of them who live overseas, but income taxes are regarded as the most damaging factor. This is before they even ramp it up. The United States is the only major country that taxes income earned abroad, a fact that increasingly places Americans and their companies at a competitive disadvantage. Don't hire an American, it's too expensive.
But see, the focus of almost all of these is on Americans who are earning money overseas, generally working for an American company.
Exactly.
Which is the vast minority now, because they've killed that by, by the way they tax, American companies are no longer hiring Americans for their overseas.
I know. I mean, they destroyed the whole reason for having a discussion. That's absolutely right. But it also explains why, if we look at the sequence of events, right? So we have, the Democrats getting rid of the foreign income exclusion, okay, causing this crisis. Causing the formation of ACA and, and apparently they lobbied Senator McGovern, to get this law passed, right? Resulting in the Carter administration, having to write the report and ACA providing the information for it. But it sort of explains, given that the getting rid of the foreign income exclusion was the trigger, right, for all the problems. And the whole purpose of the foreign income exclusion is precisely that, to make it easy to employ Americans abroad, right? It was no reason other than that. That explains why that's really the focus there, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you make a great point, Karen, that, you know, the basis for this is completely obsolete now. You know, the whole idea that we're dealing with expatriates. But anyway, an amazing archaeological find.
Excellent find, yeah.
Just think, when the history of the United States is written and they go through the rubble, identifying the PFIC Memorial, the FBAR Museum, the National Museum of Forms, and things like that, who knows? Maybe there will be a remnant of this 1978 law in the ACA report. What do you think?
Very possibly.
Well, Laura, any closing thoughts for today?
No, well, it was a great find. Really good find. Very, very interesting. Helps put different things in perspective.
Certainly does. Karen?
Yeah, no, I found it fascinating to read the ACA report and to see how many of the issues they raised, especially the tax issues, which are the ones that government refused to fix, they're still issues. Mm-hmm. And even though they didn't have some of the worst laws that we're dealing with now, they still had issues.
Yeah, it's amazing how long this problem goes back and how it just keeps getting worse and worse. Well, I think we ought to put some of this stuff up on the SEAT site, actually, so lest anybody get the impression this is a new problem. Although I certainly think that FATCA has supercharged the problem. Anyway, this has been great. This is John Richardson speaking with fellow SEAT members, Karen Albert and Laura Snyder. Thank you both for chatting with me today.
Thank you.
Thank you, John.